day on the front porch getting kids excited about math and science.
The program's goal is to try to instill in these students a desire that they would have the dream of being a science or technology hero for tomorrow, an Einstein or an Edison.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. The middle school years can be a tough time, and many kids lose interest in math and science. The First Lego League is designed to inspire them. The First Lego League is a competition for teams of students age 9 to 14. They're given a complicated challenge, which they have to complete with small robots made entirely of Lego parts. They have to design, build, and operate the robots and explain the problem-solving process. One of the best teams in the world is from southern New Hampshire. Mindstorms Mayhem has taken top honors at the state level 2 years in a row, and this spring they'll be defending their international title. The coach of Mindstorms Mayhem is Ken Streeter, a Bedford resident and a software engineer at BAE Systems. He's here to talk about the First Lego League and his championship team. Ken, welcome to the front porch.
Well, it's good to be here, John.
What materials are used in this competition? I mean, you've got the little plastic Legos, but is it anything else, or is it just the Legos?
The main thing that the students use for the robotics part of the competition is Legos. Mm-hmm. Lego builds a special kit that can be available commercially called a Mindstorms kit.
Hence the name of your team, Mindstorms Mayhem.
That's exactly right.
Right. So this Mindstorms kit includes some motors and gears and things like that that allows you to build small robots on a Lego scale?
Exactly. You use regular Lego building bricks and elements and some of the ones from their more sophisticated Technics kits that allow you to use gears and axles and pulleys, and then you add to that some robotic pieces such as motors and sensors and like a odometer kind of sensor, and then a computer programmable brick that you can put programs into it and tell it when to turn the motors and stuff on.
Wow. Is this all Lego, or are there other elements that you're adding to the Lego stuff?
For this competition, all the robotic stuff is Lego products.
Mm-hmm. You ever have anyone sneaking in other stuff?
There are actually at the tournaments. There are a technical inspection that the robot undergoes to make sure that you're using only things from the approved list of parts. There are some constraints. The kids are only allowed to have one of the programmable computers and only three motors and some other things, limitations on their sensors. But for the most part, they can use any of the fun Lego bricks that you play with as a kid.
What are the benefits and limitations of being restricted to Legos?
One of the big pluses with using Lego for this robotic competition, especially for middle school age students, is there are just so many ways to connect the bricks together to build all different kinds of things out of them. They go together quickly and easily. They're practically indestructible. although some of the robotic components, you know, are a little more fragile and have to be handled carefully. A few of the drawbacks that they have is that there is a limited set of pieces, and they only go together at certain angles and in certain ways. And sometimes the kids want to make not only a functional robot, but a robot that's aesthetically pleasing, that looks cool. And that can sometimes be a little difficult to do.
Are you restricted in terms of connecting? I mean, do they have to snap together like Legos, or can you sneak in a little glue?
Not allowed to use any glue or strings like that, but there are some special rubber bands that are used in some of the Lego kits, and there's even a Lego string that can be used. But in general, you use the snap-together method for Legos. The kids learn some pretty advanced building techniques of being able to build things like trusses or other shapes like that, because the Legos aren't just like they were when I was a small kid. It's just the little knobs on top and you snap a piece on. Now there's all these beams and pins and axles and other interesting connectors.
Now, the First Lego League season basically follows the school calendar. Every September, they announce that year's challenge. And then the following spring is the big international competition. What happens in between? What's the calendar like?
Mm-hmm. Each year, the challenge is announced typically the second week of September. And at that time, the specific missions that the robot needs to perform are announced to all the teams that are competing. And also the special challenge theme for that year is announced as well. And the challenge theme brings in a more of a research or application of robotics to society type concept into the competition. So it's not just about building robots. But that starts at the beginning of September. And then The teams typically meet one or two nights a week, depending on the commitment level of the team, for 12 weeks until the local tournaments that are used to qualify for a state tournament. Those typically happen sometime shortly before Thanksgiving. And then the second week of December, the teams that qualified for the state tournament compete there and get to show off what they've learned and compete their robots against the other best teams from throughout the state.
And then you go on to the international tournament, which is in the spring.
Yes, one fortunate team each year wins the all-around director's award of the tournament and is able to compete at the international tournament, which is not until April, and is held in conjunction with the high schoolers' first robotics competition as well. So it's a pretty large event.
Now, the international competition goes on for 3 days. What all happens in that time?
In the 3 days, the first 2 days are the active competition for the middle school students. The first day is primarily a judging day and a robot practice day. In addition to building the robot that solves some challenge missions where they get specific points defined for, according to the robot game for that year, they also get judged on three other categories at the tournaments. And those three categories include a research project that they've done, which relates to robotics and its application to society with theme ideas. And they're also judged on their ability to explain their technical work, their design of the robot, how they solve the missions, and the way in which they programmed it. Because it's not just the physical construction, they also have to program the robot in a visual computer language that tells the robot exactly what to do. So they're judged on their ability to describe that to the judges. Do the students understand what they've done? How did they come up with their ideas?
Yeah.
How did they implement them? And then the other aspect of the judging, the third and final aspect, is their ability to work together as a team. They're judged upon their teamwork ability. Is the entire team working on the robot together? Was it not just one or two students that carried the whole team, but did each student contribute in a meaningful fashion to the team and get something out of the experience?
Yeah, I guess there's also a competition where you join with other teams and you have to kind of work together on the fly.
There is. One of the really interesting things that they do at the international tournament, because of the multi-day format, is they're able to get four different teams that are each a state tournament winner on their own right together to compete as one team. And they're given a little research project to solve at the tournament by interviewing attendees at the tournament. Last year, the kids were asked to find out what Six Sigma is at the tournament. And most of them had never heard of it before. So it was a fun endeavor. But there were enough engineers there that with some interviewing, they could find someone that knew what it was. And they also, working with those three other teams, get to find out a way to combine their four different robots together to solve the table missions in quick succession with each robot doing a part of the work. And that's a pretty tough problem to solve, just given a few minutes to think about it at the tournament on the fly.
Have you ever had like a real disaster happen?
We have had some real disasters happen. There's two incidents in particular that we've had the opportunity to really have the kids rise to the occasion with some adversity that came. And one of those was actually at the international tournament last year. The team had decided that the safest way to transport their potentially fragile robot from New Hampshire down to Atlanta was to pack it up in a shipping crate with lots of bubble wrap and then send that on the airplane and pack it up at home and then not unpack it again until we arrived at the tournament. So we had arrived at the tournament that morning of the competition, and we've just arrived at the Georgia Dome. The students are all excited to be kind of awe of this huge stadium, and they're right down in the center in the middle of it. And they are looking to get the robot attachments out of the box to put it together. And in the meantime, their coach, I am trying to find out what their schedule is for the day and when our first judging event is. And we find out that their first judging is in about 25 minutes at the same time that the students find out that the robot that had been shipped down so carefully in bubble wrap had been unpacked by the security inspection folks on the airplane. And they didn't put it back together quite the way it was supposed to be.
Oh,
and
boy.
So they have a couple of their attachments for their robot are in various stages of disassembly and clearly not going to work. And they have only 25 minutes to get it all put back together and test it out, try it before they're being judged.
I suppose these robots would look awfully funny on an X-ray machine.
I don't know what they look like. They must look strange. They definitely attracted attention because all of our Lego boxes were unpacked each time we traveled. Another case of adversity they had was actually at this year's state tournament. The students worked very hard on getting their programs to work and had generally very good success with running the robot. However, on this one round, they went up to run the robot, and nothing seemed to work. They'd tell it to do the first mission it was supposed to do, and instead of driving out and nicely setting a food tray on a table and pushing in the chairs, it instead kind of like tried to do a jig instead. And they couldn't figure out what was going on, and it doesn't do the second mission or the third mission, and none of the kids know what's going on or what happened. And we ended up having, I think, maybe the lowest score in the entire tournament from that round. And it turned out that somewhere between that instant when they'd run the robot and the last time it had worked half an hour earlier, the batteries must have become loose in the robot or something, and it lost all of its programs. Mm. So the robot didn't know what it was doing and didn't do anything. And so that was a real humbling learning experience for the kids, of being able to cope with, you know, recovering from that adversity and going on and not losing heart.
Ken Streeter is on the front porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. We'll be back after a short break. Still to come, Ken will give us a behind-the-scenes look at his team, how he puts it together, how they practice and design, and using Legos in stop-action animation. And tomorrow on the front porch, rediscovering the stories of British soldiers killed in World War I.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for The Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from Franklin Pierce College, now offering the Action MBA in New Business Development at the Chanel Drive campus in Concord. Information online at fpc.edu. Countrywood's Unfinished Furniture, Route 27 in Raymond, a leader in unfinished furniture for over 20 years and a proud supporter of the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. And the Keene Sentinel, the daily newspaper providing news coverage to Keene and the Monadnock region since 1799. Available online at sentinelsource.com. Stay with us for more on The Front Porch, and at 7 o'clock, it's fresh air.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Ken Streeter, coach of Mindstorms Mayhem, a team from Southern New Hampshire in the first Lego League. They've won state and international competitions in designing, building, and operating robots made from Legos. Last year's challenge in the competition where you won the director's award at the state and international level, the challenge was Mission Mars. Could you tell us what it was and what challenges the team had to meet?
Yes. The last year's challenge, Mission Mars, was modeled after the missions that the NASA scientists have to face in trying to construct a robotic rover that can go to Mars and bring back information about what it finds there to the scientists here on Earth. Mm-hmm. And accordingly, the students with their Lego robot would have a set of missions that emulated tasks such as driving off of the landing platform once it arrives on Mars, or driving up into a crater, or repairing a broken down rover that was stranded out on the surface. The idea would be to have one rover actually drive out and fix a fault that had happened in the other one. So they had a series of missions modeled after that.
Picking up samples and stuff like that.
They also had a mission where they were picking up some rock samples. Mm-hmm. They had a mission where they would take and put one of those rock samples into a Mars Ascent Vehicle launcher that would try to send that rock sample back to Earth.
I suppose the only challenge you didn't have to meet that NASA did was actually like throwing this module at the surface and having it land and bounce and survive.
That's true. That's one of the ones they didn't have to do, fortunately. Although, interestingly, since you mentioned that one of their missions this year they solved by doing kind of a flop-down technique and tried to figure out how they can make the robot survive falling 6 or 8 inches onto the table without falling apart.
Hmm. What was the toughest part of the Mission Mars challenge? Was there something that was especially difficult for your team to solve?
One of the things that posed a lot of difficulty for the team with Mission Mars stems from the approach the team took their previous year doing a city sites challenge. the playing field for city sites had a lot of nice roads that were very easy for the robot to follow along. It has a light sensor, and it can see where the dark road is and the light mat next to it, and it can follow that line and drive very accurately. Well, for the Mars Challenge, the game designers at first decided to have the mat be not just a uniform white background, but actually had a image of the surface of Mars showing craters and the like on it. So it wasn't a nice white background. So the team had this strategy of trying to follow lines on the mat to navigate from place to place on the playing field, and found that it was very, very difficult due to this noisy background. And to their credit, they kept at it and worked at it and did manage to come up with a program that was able to follow some of the lines on the Mission Mars mat. But that was by far the most difficult task they had.
What's this year's challenge?
This year's challenge is called No Limits, and it is a challenge that's intended to have the students think about difficulties that people have in our society with things like moving about or walking, or one person may have trouble reading signs due to visual impairment, or another person may have difficulty climbing upstairs. And the challenge this year was intended to get the kids to think about ways that technological solutions or robotics could be used to aid people get...
with different kinds of handicaps.
That's correct.
Yeah. You have on the table in front of us here one of the robots that your team has put together for this year's challenge. Could you tell us what this is, first of all?
Yes. Well, there's the basic Lego robot that I was talking about earlier that has the computer brain in it that they mm-hmm. program. But then, in addition to that, they build all these attachments with gears and arms to perform different maneuvers.
And the basic Lego robot kind of looks like a little miniature car or vehicle.
It does. The one they built looks like a little car. It all depends on what the team comes up with.
Sure.
But it looks like a little car. It's, you know, about half the size of a loaf of bread. It's not very large, but it does pack a lot of technology into it.
And then you have an attachment, one of the many attachments on the car right now, which is, what is it supposed to do?
Well, one of the challenges this year is to take and place a serving tray with a bowl of food on it. It's not real food. It's little Lego pieces that are intended to represent food.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to place this on a small little table. And they also have a challenge to take and push some chairs into that table. It's a common household task that many people can do easily, but that's very difficult for other people with physical disabilities. The students have pre-programmed the robot to take and drive out to the table and put something on it.
But and we have the little table about a foot and a half in front of the robot here.
And then it lowers the food onto the table and pushes the chairs in, and then
it backs away. And it did that with a minimum of guidance, even though this table is not the regulation Lego course here.
That's right. In the real competition, they would follow the robot would follow along a wall mm-hmm. to be able to position itself accurately. The kids have found that by doing things like following walls, much like a blind person might do with a cane, that they can get the robot to find exactly where it wants to be.
You've had the state competition already for year's No Limits. How'd Mindstorms Mayhem do?
Mindstorms Mayhem this year, we were very fortunate in how we did this year. There were a couple times during the competition when it seemed things weren't going our way. The kids had the major catastrophe during one of the rounds.
Yeah.
And they also weren't quite as happy with their initial performance in one of the judging rounds. But they did have the robot which had the highest score at the tournament in the robot performance competition, and they received first place for that. And they, again, won the Director's Award, the All-Around Award for the tournament.
So you're going to the international competition then?
We are. The team is currently working on revising their programs and their research presentation and started their fundraising effort to try to raise funds for the team to head down.
Are you changing the way you're going to pack your robots for shipment to the competition?
We haven't figured out how, but we're not going to do it the same way as last year.
The first Lego League is only a few years old. It's been growing very rapidly. In 1999, I think I saw 1,600 kids. And 2003, it was 43,000 or something like that. And it's gotten international in a very short time. Is the competition getting tougher every year?
The competition, the level of competition and level of preparation for the teams is definitely getting much higher every year. The first year that we were involved 3 years ago was, I think, the first year that the program really turned the corner and had explosive growth, particularly here in southern New Hampshire. The 2002 season was the first year that we had a formal state tournament in New Hampshire and qualifying tournaments to get to that tournament. And a lot of the teams that competed that year are still around now. So there's veteran teams and veteran coaches that are looking for ever more difficult problems to solve on the robot challenge table. And the competition has gotten much, much steeper.
How have you seen this program affect your own kids and their development and their growth?
I have two sons that are on the team. My eldest son is now graduated from the middle school program and is now in the high school robotics program. But one thing, there's a number of things I've really appreciated about having them in the program. One of those is their ability to communicate ideas that they have to others and listen to the ideas of the others on the team. A very important part of problem solving in a team is being able to describe an idea you have and listen to other people's ideas and be able to embrace their ideas, look for the benefits and strengths and weaknesses in your ideas and their ideas, and put those together to get better ideas that the team can then go after as their solution. So one thing I've been very glad that the students have developed is this increased ability to communicate and listen to those ideas.
I'm John Walters on the front porch with Ken Streeter. He's coach of Mindstorms Mayhem, a team from southern New Hampshire in the first LEGO League. They design, build, and operate robots to meet a complicated mission challenge. The first LEGO League is for kids age 9 to 14, late elementary, early middle school years. That's a critical time for a lot of kids. They lose interest, especially in things like math and science, but often school in general. How does this competition help?
Yep. That's actually one of the things that I most like about the first LEGO League program. The primary goal of the program is to get those middle school age students interested in science and technology. So many fifth or sixth graders would have aspirations to be a professional sports player or to be a movie star in Hollywood, which are, you know, good goals and meaningful careers, but there are very, very few people that can attain to the level that the students would want to be, a Nomar Garcia Parr or someone like that. And so instead, the program's goal is to try to instill in these students a desire that they would have the dream of being a science or technology hero for tomorrow, an Einstein or an Edison. And by having these exciting sports-like tournaments and a competition where the students get to take a fun activity like playing with Legos and turn it into a real useful skill, developing teamwork, doing problem solving, creative thinking, the kids can hopefully get a desire to study science and technology not just as a fun thing, but as a career, and turn that into an engineering career where one of these students one day might come up with an immunization or a diet supplement to prevent cancer from even getting started.
Did you play with Legos as a kid?
I did play with Legos as a kid. One of the things I would love to have now that they didn't have when I was a kid was a Lego train set. I think it would be an absolutely incredible thing to have. But I used to build all kinds of things with Legos. I remember a couple airplane and ship models that I would build again and again and again and then build my own versions of them and fly them around.
How are your skills now? If you were up against, you know, one of your team members, how would you do?
The kids know that it's much better if they're the ones that are touching the Legos than the coach. Because I was actually scared to bring a robot into the studio today because I was scared I was going to break something on it. They're the Lego masters on the team.
Do you have a lot of Legos sitting around your house?
We do now. We have many, many more now that we've done this first LEGO League for a few years. We have a vast assortment of Legos all organized into little bins by size, using tackle boxes that you would put your fishing lures in, but having different size and shape and color Legos in each of the little compartments. So it's a rare day in our house where you go to vacuum and don't hear the clunk, clunk, clunk sound of a Lego.
You and one of your coworkers and fellow coaches have done some animations based on these Lego competitions. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, I'd be glad to. My friend at work, Sky Sweeney, who was just an acquaintance of mine before this first Lego League competition was introduced to me by him 3 years ago, and now has become one of my best friends at work. But after the 2002 tournament, we realized that at the tournament venue, the students are very intimately familiar with the challenge and all of the different things that the robot needs to do and the points that it scores. But the parents or the grandparents and the spectators that come to watch haven't been introduced to that yet. And typically the MC at the tournament would describe some of those things, but it wouldn't be a very interesting or compelling way for the students to have it explained. They'd heard it before, and we wanted to come up with a way that would enable both the students and the parents to have a fun overview of the program. And so my friend Sky came up with the idea of doing a Lego stop-action animation movie. And so he uses a little Lego minifig and animates it by moving it like a 16th of an inch at a time and making a movie frame by frame out of that. And we write a whole script that has a dialogue that explains what the purpose of each of the challenge missions are that year.
That you and Sky are friends and colleagues at work. When the competition starts, do the gloves come off?
One would think they might, but no, they don't. We share ideas and strategies for coaching our teams together. It's very much a iron sharpens iron kind of synergy that we have with each kind of encouraging and egging on the others.
But you beat him.
Yes. Well, I didn't, but the team's robot did.
Yes. You talked about how this competition develops the kids' problem-solving skills, teamwork skills, things like that. Has it made you a better person or a better worker?
It definitely has. There are so many lessons that I have learned from being a coach on the team that are really applicable to my day job. The kinds of skills that you need to have to be an effective coach are really the same kind of ones that you need to have to be an effective product development leader at a small company, for instance.
Well, Ken, thank you very much for coming in today.
I really enjoyed it, John. Thank you.
Ken Streeter is coach of Mindstorms Mayhem, a team from Southern New Hampshire in the first Lego League. They design, build, and operate robots to meet a complicated mission challenge. The team has won state and international competitions, and we'll post a link to their website on the front porch section of nhpr.org. Front Porch is produced by Shay Zeller and Liz Bulkley. You can get more information about today's show and listen anytime at our website, nhpr.org. You can also pass on your ideas for guests, order tapes or CDs of the show, and sign up for our weekly schedule by email. Next time on The Front Porch, rediscovering the stories of lost British soldiers. Corey Kilvert is an amateur military historian from Peterborough. He owns medals awarded to 8 soldiers in World War I. He decided to find out the stories of these men. It turned out to be a 20-year effort, searching through old books and records and tracking down relatives. He tells their stories in a new book. I'm John Walters. Join us on The Front Porch tomorrow at 6:30 on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. We're coming up to 7 o'clock and fresh air at the top of the hour. Stay with us. I'm Roger Parmley at NHPR. We get support from our contributing listeners and from Catholic Medical Center's 24-7 Ask a Nurse program, where New Hampshire residents find referrals for primary care and specialty physicians and answers to medical and health-related questions at 626-2626. And the Derryfield School celebrating 40 years of academic challenge and opportunity for students in grades 6 through 12. Information on the web at Derryfield.org. You can subscribe to receive the NHPR news and programs that interest you in your RSS newsreader. To find out more, click on the orange XML button at nhpr.org. This is New Hampshire Public Radio, WEBO Concord 89.1, WEBH Hanover at 91.3, WEBN Keene at 90.7, WEBC Gorham 107.1, and WEBJ Jackson 99.5 FM.